In this on-demand age, is live worth it? It's the Podcast Report, episode 127. Show notes, links, conversation, and more at thepodcastreport.com/127. It's a long interview, so I'm going to front load it. This episode of the Podcast Report is brought to you by How to Podcast Training at howtopodcasttraining.com. We've launched our first batch of students, thrilled with it. And if you want to get on the list, visit howtopodcasttraining.com. Today, I have Rob Greenlee. I have known Rob for a long time. I've known Rob before he was in Zune. Yes, Zune, the Microsoft attempted a media player. Rob did some really interesting things there. Rob is now at Spreaker, which is a podcast company that has the interested element of having a live element to what it is that they're doing. One of the things I love about Rob is that he doesn't call it live podcasting like some do. Podcasting, by its very nature, is pre-recorded media placed online, made available for on-demand or subscription-based delivery. So you really can't do a live podcast, but there is the theme of live. There is the model of live. There's the excitement of live. There is the buzz of live. I've even got my How to Stream Video Live book. And so I brought Rob on to chat about live. Does it matter? Should we still do it? Now, yes, he's at Spreaker, so yes, he's going to speak to it, but he has some interesting thoughts on live and some things that I think are really worth examining. We chat a little bit about a recent cameo that Zune made. We'll chat about that. And then towards the end, we look at what Google's doing with podcasting and what that means and some rumors Rob has heard as well. I've got the links to everything at thepodcastreport.com/127, my show over at Spreaker. We've got a link to Rob, a link to Rob's email address for the pass-through thing that he chatted about. So a whole bunch of links at thepodcastreport.com/127. I would love your thoughts on this episode. If you head out to thepodcastreport.com/127, you can make them there, or you can go to thepodcastreport.com/iTunes, thepodcastreport.com/Stitcher, thepodcastreport.com/Google, wherever it is that you want to go, you can definitely do that. If you want to make the interaction, if you want to chat, thepodcastreport.com/Twitter/Facebook, etc. So with that said and done, let's get to Rob. I will end with Rob's last word. Good stuff here. Enjoy. I have Rob Greenlee on the Skype phone. Rob, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Paul. It's great to be here.
You just got inducted into the Podcasting Hall of Fame, or just got whatever the proper term is. The ceremony has not happened yet, but
I got sucked in, I guess. It was like a vortex that pulled me in.
Rob and I have a long history, and it's funny. I thought of Rob the last couple of weeks. I wanted to bring him on the show to talk about this topic. And then this weekend, I was sitting in a crowded movie theater, watching a movie that I knew had several cameos. Most of the cameos have been spoiled to me. But one of the cameos was not spoiled, and all of a sudden, the Microsoft Zune pops up. Yes, it was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and I just had to laugh.
Back to the Future, right, Paul?
Is back to the Future. So, Rob, what was your connection with the Microsoft Zune?
Well, I spent 6 years working on Zune podcasting, so I was hired in there to build the podcasting side of the platform. I actually spent about 6 months working on the TV show side of it for a while. I got that off the ground.
I remember that.
So I was kind of in the middle of it. You know, I was on not the first group of team members on the Zune, but I was kind of in the second wave because I came in when the second kind of upgrade happened. So it was like a year after it actually launched, but it was quite a fun journey. I spent quite a bit of time working at Microsoft, and it was kind of sad to see them kind of piece by piece dismantle that whole platform, because it was an exciting platform at the time. We just had a difficult time competing with the juggernaut that would be the Apple iPod. So yeah.
Yeah, I had bet a lot on it too. I hadn't taken a job at Microsoft, but my first gig in internet was supporting a little product called Microsoft FrontPage, and I still did well on that. I've still got one tool for Microsoft FrontPage still running 13 years after the death of FrontPage that still pays my mortgage and my car payment. And so I had this idea. I saw Zune. I love Zune. I think Rob and I were probably two of the biggest fans of Zune. And I saw it as the next step. I love the software. I love the fact that there was a guy who was identifiable, who was in charge of the podcasting group. And I was sad to see it go as well. But there we go. Rob's been a while. Rob is now at Spreaker. For those who don't know what Spreaker is, give us 30 seconds or so.
Well, it's a podcast hosting platform and that also supports live streaming. So we can combine the worlds of kind of live online radio with podcasting. So if you wanted to do a show live and then have it published as a podcast, it's easy to do on Spreaker. We give you the free apps and the plans. It all is included in every plan that we have is the live streaming component. So it's really a powerful platform. That's why I'm working here, is because it was a type of a platform that I would have built myself if I was going to build a company. So it's been exciting. I've been here for a little over 2 years now, and I've been really working with a lot of content creators from the full spectrum, which really, you know, encapsulates my past in this medium as well, because I spent a lot of years doing live radio and was involved in streaming for many, many years in the early days of me doing my original show that kind of got me started in all this. I was using Windows Media streaming servers and real streaming servers back in those days, and that's where most of my audience came from. So when podcasting launched in 2004, it was a pretty simple, it wasn't a big deal for me. It was pretty simple. I just added the enclosure tag to my blog RSS feed, and I was like, okay, is that it? Is that all I have to do? And it was fairly straightforward. And I took my radio show and made it a podcast.
Now, I want to speak to that because, sadly, in our space, there are a number of times when a company comes up with a unique angle, a unique piece of tech, a unique something, and they put someone in charge of it who appreciates it, but isn't necessarily well-versed in that space. And I want to just emphasize what Rob said here. Long history in radio, internet radio, streaming, live, not just the tech of live, but the psychology of live and the production of live. And so they brought on Rob for his unique ability, and Rob was able to come and bring not just, you know, tech savviness, but some history and experience to this. And that's why I brought Rob on today. So the question, you know, it's funny, we were chatting before we hit the record button, Rob. You know, when we started, live was really expensive, really tough. Complicated. I mean, Windows Media Server, you said that, just kind of ran shivers through my body. I mean, I used it a couple of times, but it was a lot of work. Yeah. It was really expensive, really hard, got a little bit easier, but kind of stayed expensive. Now we're in the age where it's, for all sakes and purposes, free with an existing account. Spreaker does a fantastic job. The software's great. You know, boy, talking about juggernauts, you know, Facebook is, of course, killing it live as well. Mm-hmm. And there are rumors of a live media option coming out of Facebook. I think the new Alexas are – there she goes. I just turned on there. She's going to say something in a second.
The new lady
in a tube from Amazon – I think is going to make that world interesting as well. Yeah. So now that it is cheap, almost free, now that it is easy to use, the question is it worth it? And I don't mean is it worth it because, yeah, everybody likes to do radio. But the fact of the matter is you and I had all these grand ideas of let's do the live episode live. But the logistics of putting the audience together, sending out the mailing, let everybody know when it's doing all these things, I just decided, you know, it wasn't worth it because the majority of the people were going to consume this thing and are consuming this. And you who are listening to this right now are consuming this not live, but in the downloads. So, Rob, the big question a few minutes into this is, you know, in this on-demand age, is live worth it?
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to do and the audience that you're trying to reach and the connection that you're trying to make with that audience, I think is the question. And live is not for everyone. I think I think generally if you speak to folks or podcasters that are doing live, they will tell you that it makes them a better podcaster or broadcaster or online media creator to do what they do live. You know, there's very little possibility of being able to edit. So you really have to be prepared and focused. I don't have any problem doing live myself, but I do know a lot of people that will take the position that on demand is where the market is, and I can't really argue with that. I think that on demand is where the vast numbers of listeners will be, even if you do a live show. That's just the reality of it. But you are also not tapping into one of the core elements that has made live radio as popular as it has for many decades, is the ability to have a connection with your audience at a much deeper level. And I think that's the power of it. But you have to realize you're talking about 1% of your listeners or less will probably connect with you live. But I can tell you those 1% of listeners will be able to provide you with impact and contribution to your show, whether it be comments, whether it be actually if you wanted to have them join you on your show too. So those are going to be your passionate fans, are the ones that are willing to take time out of their day, put it in their schedule, and come in and listen to you live. And making that connection with people is really what this medium is about. But you're also going to make that connection with thousands of other people that will connect with you on demand as well. So you still need to create a show that is personable and will create fans and friends, essentially. And that's the goal that I do with podcasting, is to be really honest and to have open and frank conversations. I mean, the two shows that I do every week, that's exactly what we do. You know, I do a show with Todd Cochran from Blueberry Raw Voice, and we don't do any show prep on that. We just turn on our webcams every morning at Saturday morning at 9 a.m. and talk about podcasting in the industry. There's no show prep. We just get, it's like we met at Starbucks and we're just talking. That's how I approach it. And, you know, this whole thing of being fearful of live is something that I think is real. I think it takes time to get over that fear of talking live and making sure that you're able to communicate ideas. And it does take some training of your mind to be able to multitask in this, because oftentimes when you're doing live, you're having to juggle software and you're having to, you know, monkey around with Skype and play around with settings and do sorts of things. Sometimes you'll drop connections and you have to be able to be agile and know how to handle these things. So it's not for everyone, but I think it can be for everyone if one tries it and learns.
I heard about Spreaker before you came on board. I played with it, and you know, I always get nervous in the industry when a piece of technology pops up. I always wonder, you know, are they going to make it? Like, because everyone wants to be free, you know, and then get bought by somebody. Yeah. And so Spreaker popped up, and the thing I loved about Spreaker, and to this day, they're still doing it, so I like that. And it wasn't just the hiring of you, Rob. There was something else. The idea with Spreaker was that the two are one and the same. See, for a while in podcasting, there was this battle about, you know, why are you podcasting when so many more people are listening to internet radio? You know, yes, those numbers were true, but internet radio included streaming Pandora and music and that kind of thing. And there was this idea that, are you doing live or are you doing podcast? And then what was beautiful was there were some rogues like you who would do live, take the recording, make it a podcast. And it's not just you, little unknowns like Dave Ramsey. And then those guys were following that model as well. But what Spreaker did that was interesting was Spreaker just said, hey, you got to produce it at some point. Might as well produce it live. And then let's use the tech to just go from live to instantly on demand. Which is funny because, you know, that's basically what's happening now with all the TV online. I'm a big fan of the show The Americans, you know, and I never catch the show Tuesday night when it airs because way after my bedtime, you know, but then the next morning it's available immediately. And this is a model that people like. And The Americans now knows, you know, that show knows that the amount of people watch it live is really insignificant, but you have to broadcast it at some point, you know. And I think one of the things that's interesting in podcasting you know, Rob, you deal with a lot of veteran podcasters, you know, guys like Todd in it forever, you know, who could pick this up. But here's the thing. I deal with a lot of clients who just get petrified and terrified with that first episode. And when you have the nicety of the recording studio, and then you have the editor, you know, anywhere from the Fiverr.com editor to the kid newly released from the Institute of Podcast Learning, whatever, you know, who wants to charge $100,000 to edit. They have this idea that, you know, I can now produce this like I do a Beatles album, you know, and not one of the live ones. And so what Spreaker did was Spreaker said, hey, do it live for the people who want it live, and then make it a podcast immediately afterwards.
Yep.
Kind of what you and Todd do with the New Media Show, except, of course, that's video, so that's not quite there. But that's broadcast live and made available as the podcast afterwards.
Yeah, it's both audio and video podcast, yeah.
It's funny because back before Spreaker, possibly even before you were at Zune, although it's right about that time, I came up with this idea of the new media content creation model. And if anybody wants to go to YouTube, there's old videos out there in 4:3 even, of me explaining the new media content creation model. And that was simply that you got to record at some point. I mean, that's just space-time continuum.
Yep.
And if you record live, you don't get the niceties of editing, which means maybe you're going to have a second cup of coffee. Maybe you're going to think things through. Maybe you'll outline a little bit better if you need it, or maybe just the adrenaline will kick in. You got to record at some point, so why don't you record in front of an audience? Because there is an audience who wants you live. There is an audience who doesn't want to hear the replay. They want to hear it the second it happens. Now, at the time when I suggested the new media content creation model, I had suggested a telephone bridge line was the model I had suggested. And it's funny because the telephone bridge line I suggested in that video, although at the time was screaming cheap, is still many, many, many more times the cost of you know, a Spreaker account right now. Mm-hmm. And I suggest you got to create it at some point, create it live, and then produce it as a podcast. So that's fine and dandy, this path. Now, if you go to the average social media event, they will tell you that, you know, Facebook loves live and the world loves live, and you want to get people's attention, go live. And there are books out there about live. I've got my How to Stream book is out there. And all these people are pushing live as an entity in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You know, is that an entity in and of itself anymore? You know, or are these people just trying to sell books? Would you ever do a show only live and never archive it?
No, I think that's a mistake. I mean, but that's just me. I mean, I can tell you that there's thousands of show creators that are creating live shows on Spreaker that don't have an RSS feed in iTunes. So, you know, am I to say that that's wrong? I just that's just not what I would do.
Is that a tech decision? Is that a decision? Do you know?
I think it's a decision that content creator wants to create an online radio show. I think it's what they're thinking. They think terrestrial broadcast radio, I'm going to do it over the internet because I can't necessarily get on a radio station, but I can do it just like radio is doing, but I'll just do it on the internet. And I think that's been a model that's been gone for many years. I mean, if I go back to the very early days of when I was involved in this medium, you know, and because there are shows out there that are getting huge audience connections. I mean, I've had shows on Spreaker that were getting 6,000 to 10,000 comments flowing through in a 2.5 hour live program. People are highly engaged in those shows, and sometimes those shows don't feel the necessity to put it out as a download. So I advise them to do that. And their numbers get higher, but some hosts just like to do it live. That's it.
Is there – so a good chunk of my client base are marketers and people who leverage their show not to sell ads for Blue Apron or Audible or any of the classics – but to actually use the show to leverage and market their own products, tools, services. One of the problems with podcasting since day one, one of the dirty little secrets that us podcasters don't like to talk about, is the simple fact that because a podcast is available anytime, any place, anywhere, there's no urgency associated with it. Mm-hmm. I always know, I love your Todd show. It's fun to hear what you guys say, you know, and part of the fun is not always agreeing, you know, but I'm not going to be there Saturday morning. That's just not my style. And, but I know that because that show is archived, I know I can listen to it anytime, any place, anywhere. And as a result, I don't yep. because the tyranny of the urgent.
Yeah.
Is there a marketing play realistically anymore for, you know, if you don't listen Wednesday between 8 and 9, you don't get the show. Anybody doing that?
Yeah, I think that these shows that I was just talking about, I think are doing that. Though I have to say that most of those shows are still archived on Spreaker. It isn't like they don't make them available. They can be streamed off of our website. But so I think that there is a place for that in the market. And
so yeah. they're doing the show. Basically, they're using Spreaker for its internet radio capabilities and its internet radio archiving capabilities, but not its podcasting abilities.
Correct. They're just not putting an RSS feed into iTunes is really what it comes down to. All they're making their show available off their website through our web embeddable player. Or people are coming to just the Spreaker website to listen to it. Spreaker has about 6 to 7 million people that are listening to programs just on the Spreaker platform. So it's a pretty good size group of people that are on there consuming content. Though you can easily say that those folks could build a much larger audience if they made their show available on a lot of other listening platforms. But you know, that's a little bit of a different model too. And some of these shows will actually, do some post-production work on their live shows and then re-upload them to Spreaker. So they can go in and make some edits. The platform does allow you to do it live, have it go live, and then you can do some post-production on it and republish it to update that file to clean it up a little bit. So I think that there's many shows that are doing that as well.
I understand politically, you can't speak to try to be political as well. the value of said strategy, and I'm not going to ask you to do that. But I do want to comment on the unique number power force represented by Apple. You know, yeah. let's speak to what we saw, you know, with our Zune years. Mm-hmm. I have one client who killing it, doing great right now. And the first post publish promotion that we do off of the show on Facebook is a direct link to the iTunes URL. And we do that because, you know, that's 85% of the audience, and it's funny. There are several iTunes scrapers several podcast clients that scrape from iTunes. So it's not just iTunes that iTunes represents, but there's several other platforms as well. Won't call them out here, but you and I know what I'm speaking to here. And we publish it to iTunes because they're just the 800-pound gorilla. I was at an event once. We were launching someone's podcast. She makes it to number one. Somebody comes to the back of the tech, comes to the back of the room with an Android phone in one hand and her iPad in the other hand. And she says, I can't subscribe to this show on my phone. You know, I go, well, but you can subscribe on the iPad. And she, oh, that's right. You know, and she subscribes and walks away. So even in that case, the Android mm-hmm. user. Well, anyway, we published this week, we published an episode. We did the same promotion we've done for the last, dozens and dozens of episodes where we promoted the iTunes link. And the person said, made some sort of snarky comment along the lines of, you know, don't you realize that iPhones is a small percentage of the world's phones? Yes, very much realize that. I'm a numbers guy. You are a numbers guy. One of our favorite numbers guys in the world, Tom Webster, you know, makes us, you know, aware of the numbers. But the numbers are simply this, you know, this huge chunk is going to come because of Apple. Mm-hmm. And you have to identify.
It's like 60%+ of all listening to a podcast happens.
Yeah. And 60 plus. And then depending on, again, how it's promoted and how it's marketed, the podcast report, actually, this show actually is very low on iTunes. I think we're at about like 58 or something last time I looked, because I got so many podcasters on so many platforms listening in so many different ways. But then I got other shows that are, you know, in the high 90s. And part of that's where it's promoted and who the audience is and whatnot. But tech for tech's sake is fun for the enthusiast, but tech for tech's sake is never a good business decision. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think where you're going with that is that sometimes tech can get in the way for new users or new people that aren't as savvy or aren't as familiar. And I think that's a key question is, you know, what's the pathway to new listeners to podcasts to find something that they would have an interest in. And I think many in the industry have been voicing this concern that there's a discovery problem for podcasting. And while I don't necessarily agree with that premise, I can see their point. I mean, trying to get new people, and there are plenty of new people out there that podcasting hasn't reached yet. But what we see in the numbers and the research is that once somebody gets hooked on it, they tend to go all in. You know, they tend to get sucked into it. It's kind of like starting to drink coffee. You know, you get addicted to it. That's the model that we see. And that's really, if you deep dive into the numbers that, you know, that the Edison Research folks, Tom, like you refer to, if you pull that share of ear out and really look at it, AM/FM radio starts to look under threat. Every podcast consumer that gets involved in this medium listening to podcasts winds up listening to more podcasts than they listen to radio. Those that do not listen to podcasts tend to listen to more radio. So that is the pattern that we've been seeing. And that appears to be what the future looks like. It's a generational shift that's happening right now. And on demand is where this medium is going, and radio is definitely a little under threat right now.
So how many millions coming through Spreaker on a month?
Well, we have about 6 to 7 million active listeners on the platform that are listening to content on the platform through our Android and iOS apps, as well as on our website. So we have lots of custom apps out there for shows that we create for shows that host on our platform. But we also have very, very good listening apps. They're Spreaker branded listening apps that have all of the shows, the 100,000 shows that are on Spreaker, plus all of the top podcasts that are hosted outside of Spreaker as well.
Now let's talk to that discovery issue, and let's talk to that strategy issue here. That many millions there, and with such an emphasis on internet radio, there have to be people coming through Spreaker, either Spreaker.com proper, or your app, or, you know, through an online radio that they listen to, who maybe don't know iTunes, who maybe don't even know podcasting. You know, I joke about my mom, you know, to this day still believes she can't subscribe to my shows because she doesn't have an Apple.
Yeah.
You know, yet she has the iHeartRadio app on her Kindle Fire.
Yeah.
Is these entities, you know, and that's the other really interesting discovery this season, you know, because iTunes is such a juggernaut, you know, we tend to think of iTunes as sort of the, you know, the king of, you know, in the high castle, and then, you know, outside of the moat are all these, you know, feudal landowners battling over the dozens of people who aren't losing the iPhone. But the fact of the matter is, it's not dozens. It's millions with you guys.
Yeah.
And it's these other places. Is there a strategy for someone to put their show on Spreaker and maybe promote inside of the Spreaker infrastructure, and let's make this not a Spreaker commercial. Let's make this a strategy play here. Are there reasons to leave the walled garden of iTunes to help in your discovery?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about here. I mean, if you're just talking about making your show available on as many listening platforms as possible, then yeah, I think that it's pretty straightforward to get your show on Spreaker. There's basically two ways of doing that. There's one, just getting in, creating an account, taking your current RSS feed that you have in iTunes and putting it into Spreaker, into our feed importer tool that basically just scans your RSS feed, picks up the new episode, and distributes on the Spreaker platform. That would be your own hosting account that you would come in and we would redistribute your show. So that's one option. And I call that secondary distribution. So you have like maybe you're primarily hosting on Libsyn or someplace like that. We can be a secondary distribution platform to reach the listeners that are using Spreaker. Or the other option, and this is something that we're slowly rolling out, is the ability to do what I call a pass-through, which is exactly what iTunes is doing, is where you would submit your feed to me, rob@spreaker.com, and I could add it to the Spreaker catalog that would only be available in the Spreaker listening apps on iOS and Android. That would be kind of like what I did at Zune, where a podcaster would submit their show to me and I would add it to the catalog. And it would pull from the original source, and Spreaker would not be rehosting that file.
Let's chat with that for a second. So if you go to thepodcastreport.com/127, this is episode 127, I'll have a link to Rob's email address, although rob@spreaker.com is not that hard. Although to spell Spreaker, let's make sure everybody knows how to spell Spreaker for those who want to go direct.
Spreaker. Yes. Spreaker. It's just basically speaker, but with an R.
Yeah. And I will put a link to that. I'll put a link to Rob's email address. And we're calling that the pass-through? What are we calling that?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a pass-through. It's the same concept that
iTunes
that iTunes does. And recently Stitcher converted over to an all pass-through platform as well. And the iHeartRadio platform is slowly converting over to a pass-through as well. The only holdouts that exist right now in non-pass-through are basically Spotify and Google Play Music, which if you want to talk about Google Play, we can do that a little bit too.
let's do that. So at thepodcastreport.com/127, I'll link to Rob's email address if you want to get your show on the list. No cost there. I will also link to, I do the thing where I have Spreaker host my show. And I will link to the podcast report at Spreaker as well, so you can take a look at what that feels like. Yeah, Rob, I wasn't planning on this, but let's talk about Google. And I just purchased a Google Home. I got about a week ago. And I'm very impressed with it. More so than the lady in the tube, where if I say her name, she'll pop up and annoy us during the podcast. I need to turn off the lady in the tube before I hit the record button here, because of course she's just out of reach. And
call her Echo.
Echo yes, is, there we go.
Because she won't respond to Miss Echo.
Yes. Well, I have you on a headphone, so you can say the name all you want. But okay. The Google Home, two things that really impressed me. A, the Edison research numbers on the connected speaker. I didn't realize how big that was in its first year. But B, the Google Home seems to be just as good as Echo in terms of that. And what's really interesting is, whereas right now it's, you got to jump through a few hoops to get your show in Amazon's infrastructure, submitting to the Google Play infrastructure puts you automatically in on the Google Home. So what are your thoughts on Google and their, I mean, the numbers are still terrible. Anybody who looks at their stats, terrible.
It's still really early days for that platform. And the same with the Echo Alexa platform. So I think it's really going to have a significant play over the next 3 to 5 years.
How so?
Well, because it's going to be in so many devices and so many platforms, and slowly but surely we're all going to be conditioned to talk more to our computers. That's just the direction it's going to go. And I think that there's good reason for that. So I'm really, really hopeful that it really starts to take off. I think not to talk a little bit about Amazon, but their recent announcement of their kind of visual, Alexa, is really an interesting play. And I think it's the first salvo into them, creating, a app experience for mobile as well. But as far as Google, getting back to what Google's doing, they seem to be kind of floundering a little bit. And honestly, on the podcasting side, I know that their leadership, on the podcasting side, as part of the Google Play Music podcasts, it's very Microsoftish, sorry, but, is in disarray right now. And there's a lot of talk and rumor that, and this is pretty substantiated at this point, that the Google Play Music podcasts area is going to be shifting over to YouTube.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what that means. Nobody in the industry really knows what that means. I do know that for many years now, YouTube has been saying that they're a great listening platform for podcasts. They are not going to support podcasts in the same way that we're all used to, but that they're just going to make them available. And many podcasts have been available on YouTube. Spreaker publishes directly automatically into YouTube. It's a feature in our platform right now. It's been there since I've been there for a couple of years now, and lots of people do it. And there is a significant listening opportunity for a podcaster to publish over there. So, you know, what Google does with that is, your guess is as good as mine right now, but it does appear that the tie-in with Google Play Music may be coming to an end soon.
So taking some notes here for the show notes, couple things. I will link, for those who are interested, if you go to thepodcastreport.com/127, I will link to Rob's shows, of course. I'm putting that Rob's shows. But I'll also link to the podcast report at Echo, Amazon's platform, and I will link to it at Google as well. And so you can see how these go across everything. At this point, it's all the pass-through model. What I think is interesting about the YouTube thing, and it's funny because this question that I asked at the beginning of the episode, you know, in this on-demand age, is live worth it? What's interesting is there's almost a second question, you know, in this YouTube age, is audio only worth it? You know, is a question a lot of people have asked. You and I have been fighting. It's funny, for the last 12 years or so, we probably have a list a mile long of all the technologies that were going to kill podcasting. You know, yeah. many of them have come and gone.
Come and gone, yeah,
yeah. Exactly. But what's interesting is I started a couple dozen episodes ago about publishing my show to YouTube automatically. And what's interesting is not a big audience there by any means, but YouTube gives you they give you reporting on how long somebody stays on your video as opposed to similar videos in your industry. You know, so are you above average or below average? And what's interesting is most of my shows, and it seems like the longer they are, you know, just the static picture with the audio tends to get a longer consumption rate than videos do, which I think is fascinating, which means people are going to YouTube, not a lot, but people are going to YouTube, are consuming a good chunk of the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for any podcaster who thinks that, you know, they're dead if every single part of the episode is not consumed, you know, time to grow up. So that's interesting. I hadn't heard that rumor, Rob. I think that makes sense. Google is obviously in disarray. The dominant position they have, you know, just simple things they could do, just take their AI to transcribe shows, put that in Google search, and then to have someone type in, you know, Rob Greenlee is live worth it, and somehow have the podcast episode show up in the Google Marketplace would be fantastic. And something that they could literally spin up a few more servers, you know, get a few of their interns, and, you know, they could write this thing in a week. And Yeah, it's an interesting space. I actually signed some NDAs with Google way back in the day when we started this. The NDAs are now over. So, you know, they've been looking at this for over a decade, and they still have not figured out how to implement it, which I think is absolutely fascinating. And it is definitely more than the Google Home. It's definitely more. Although it's very cool. I mean, I could walk downstairs and say, hey, play the latest episode of this, and even skip ahead an episode, skip ahead a few minutes, all the things we still want from Amazon. So that's an interesting play. I'll tell you, Red, do you have a YouTube Red subscription? And we'll explain what that is. But do you have one?
I don't, actually. No, okay. I don't.
So YouTube Red is a $9.
Yeah, I wanted to mention.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to mention one thing before we move on from the Google stuff and the Echo stuff, and that would be that a lot of the big hosting platforms for podcasts will at some point or ultimately support development of these skills apps that are required for the Amazon Echo Alexa platform and then the Google Home platform, as well as the Cortana platform, which is also creating skills too. And there's been rumors of across the board support for the same type of thing as well. So Microsoft is working on this as well. And I think what you're going to see is these hosting platforms like Spreaker basically enabling access to these devices automatically with all accounts.
Yep.
I think is the direction that it appears like things are going. So this problem of getting on these devices and these platforms will be solved by the leading kind of hosting platforms. I believe either as like a paid for app or it'll be included in your plan. So yeah, I don't know that the model
standard.
Has been
the tech is being solved. You know, do not spin up a live media server, guys. Spreaker has that solved for you. You know, do not produce. I didn't want that to be the commercial it sounded like, but in a lot of cases, the companies have produced the tech, and either it's plug and play easy and you can do it yourself, or you can get your guy or gal who does that thing. You don't have to write anything new. In some cases, you don't even have to pay a few extra bucks. But if you do pay a few extra bucks, it's a lot cheaper than somebody to write something new. So the tech is covered. It's the strategy. So what's the strategy going to be, Rob, when you are not just on Spreaker and not just on iTunes, but you're on the Google Home and you're on Cortana and the Lady in the Tube? Does podcasting change when you're everywhere?
I don't believe that the core of podcasting from the content perspective will change dramatically, because I believe what will happen is that those skills or those apps for those platforms will get better and better over time. They'll be easier for people to verbally navigate. One of the problems that exists in those platforms right now is the navigation of individual episodes and shows and being able to search inside of a podcast or to be able to easily go to different episodes via spoken word, or be able to easily fast forward, go back, all these kind of things that we take for granted with our visual devices that we do. These are all going to have to be handled easily and through natural language. And that's kind of where those apps are right now, of trying to develop those skills that have the usability, the verbal usability, essentially, to navigate, discover, control, subscribe, and notify. Those type of things are what's important. And a lot of that is very early days. It's not, the experience of accessing a podcast is pretty straightforward, but you have limited controls on what you can do inside of those app experiences that are part of that. Of each of those platforms.
So I want to speak to YouTube Red for a second. YouTube Red is YouTube's, attempt at the premium side of things. Netflix, you can pay $10 a month for. Hulu, you can pay $10 a month for. Pandora, you can pay $5. Different people have different options. YouTube Red is their platform. And of course, any thinking person would ask, well, wait a minute, YouTube's already free. So why would I pay for it? Well, YouTube Red does a couple of interesting things. Number one, it takes away the commercials. And if you do any research on YouTube, And boy, that Amazon, the new Echo, what do they call it? The Echo, the new visual one. Yeah. In the commercial, they had the example of someone sitting on the floor trying to fix something and saying, hey, you know, show me videos about so-and-so. Having those commercials go away, very viable. The other thing they've done is they've, and I don't know if this is going to go away, but currently they bundle Google Music into it, which is interesting. And Google Music's very good, and Google Music plays. You know, right now I can walk downstairs and I can tell a device to play an album for me that I can't do on Apple yet. But then number three is they have some content exclusive to YouTube Red. It's basically some of their stars get a budget to do higher end stuff. I don't know how attractive that is, but taking away the commercials, plus the music, plus the original content. Plus, the other thing is you can download and play offline and that type of thing begins to make sense. So it's a juggernaut. YouTube's default. You know, my mom is scared to death of podcasting, but she loves really YouTube, you know.
And, it's simple, right?
Yeah, it's videos of kitty cats. So that could be a place for Google to play. And I think they just, you know, begin to emphasize the you part, not the tube part. And, of course, the tube part is an old term that the kids today don't even really understand or know anyway. So they could have an interesting play. So
they could always call another section of it kind of U-Pod.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God, yeah. I've seen worse things come out. So Rob, it's always great to have you. I want to summarize a couple things. If I miss any links here, let me know. The question I brought Rob on for originally was, in this on-demand age, is live worth it? Rob said, yes, just because it makes you a better broadcaster, if nothing else. And for all sakes and purposes, although we're not broadcasting this live, this is not going to be edited. There's going to be an intro and some music, but, you know, it's definitely worth it. Rob was realistic about, you know, it's basically 1% or less. But that 1% or less is connected on a much deeper level. And the cool thing is the text here anyway to make it easy. Record live, go in, something like Spreaker, you can even do the post-production on a website. So it's just not as complicated, not as expensive, not as overwhelming as it used to be. Then we just chatted about, did I get that right?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good synopsis of it. Yeah.
Okay. And then we just chatted about some of the other platforms, and the thing is, it's not, you know, Spreaker has millions, and Spreaker's not the only non-iTunes entity that has millions. I would bet, you know, we went to Google, I bet you Spreaker's probably doing more bandwidth than Google Podcast is, which I think is absolutely fascinating, but just they have royally messed that up. Rob spoke to the rumor that it might become part of YouTube. That's definitely interesting. I'm going to link on the show to, I'm going to link at the show notes, thepodcastreport.com/127, all the different versions of this show, in pass through. You'll see it at Spreaker. And that actually I host there, but I will give the link to rob@spreaker.com if you want to get your show on there. Anytime you can get your show somewhere, that's always good. And, we'll link to Rob's show as well. Industry isn't done. We're 12 years old. iTunes has a huge chunk of it, but we're not done.
No.
When an entity can pop up and boast millions of users a month, there's certainly play here. When someone is as monstrously huge as Google, still hasn't figured out what they're going to do, there's still room to grow here. In a previous episode, I spoke to a you know, an attempted unicorn product that actually asked me, and I quote, is iTunes really that important? There's still a lot of lost understanding in the space. There's still a lot of opportunity to grow. I think what's fascinating is the ability for the personal brand. Rob has gone through, or personal brand isn't even the right term, the independent brand. You know, in these last 12 years, it was Rob, you know, the radio guy, and it was Rob, the Zoom guy, and then it was Rob, the Spreaker guy, and it was Rob, you know, but Rob just got in, and again, I can't remember what the exact term is, but Rob is Podcast Hall of Famer, and it's not Rob Greenlee, formerly of Zoom Podcast Hall of Famer, it's not Rob Greenlee, currently at Spreaker Podcast Hall of Famer, but it's Rob Greenlee, because he was able to take his brand, if you will, across all these things, and it's going to continue to go. And this is what's key, and this is what's valuable, and this is what's valuable. In his case, live makes sense. It's what he knows. It's what he does. It might make sense to more people who are doing it than aren't, but it doesn't necessarily make sense to anybody. And even a proponent of live, like Rob, you know, admits that. But we're still in an interesting space, and we're still in the early days. Podcasting has not yet entered high school, although it's entering very, very soon. And yeah, any additional thoughts here, Rob, or should we close it up?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Paul, and you've done the same thing. You've built quite a brand for yourself as a leader in this medium as well. It's over the many years, you've been out there speaking and helping people and being a presenter and bringing and sharing knowledge to thousands of people that have had an interest in this medium too. So you've had a significant play in helping this medium grow and to develop. You've plowed into lots of areas like premium podcasting for many years. You tried to play in that.
Yeah, well, you can't win them all.
No, well, I mean, I think that there's a place for it.
I think it'll come back. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll come back.
I mean, it's just a matter of, I mean, all these things are come full circles. Sometimes maybe when these new ideas came out, they were too early or they were too late. So timing is very important when it comes to this medium. We've seen things, like we said earlier in this show, we've seen a lot of things come and go. I tend to be a little bit skeptical of these things that come up that are new, but they're old, whether or not they can actually get traction this time. But you know, I've been around too long. So if you're new to this medium, everything is new, right? So, and that's one of my challenges has been is to help those new people that are new to the medium to get some perspective on where the medium is, where it's going, what the history of it is. And that's what's so great about having this conversation with you, Paul, is that that's kind of part of that.
Thank you, Rob. We'll put this in the show notes again at thepodcastreport.com/127. But where's the easiest place for someone to learn more about Rob?
Probably just go to my website, robgreenlee.com, and that's with two E's on the end. That's the simplest way, but I do two shows a week. I do the new media show with Todd Cochran, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific. And we're going to be doing that, this week. And that's it. Newmediashow.com. And then I do a show Wednesday, every week at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Both these shows are live, at SpreakerLiveShow.com. So you can check that out. It's a podcast and a live show.
There we go. Thank you so much, Rob. You will be at Podcast Movement 2017. Apparently, you're on every single stage simultaneously. So, but if anyone attends, they can catch up with you there. Any other big events this year that you'll be at?
I just got back from Pod Summit up in Calgary, Canada. I went to the very first podcasting conference up in Western Canada. So that was something I just came back from. That was pretty exciting. And, I'm flying back to Europe to meet with the Spreaker team. So every June we have a Spreaker retreat back in Italy. So I'm going to be going back there and meeting with the team. So I'll probably be doing some streaming from back then when I'm back there. So we'll see.
Must be tough. Yeah, meetings exactly. In Italy. Yeah. Most people have them at the IHOP.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, it's a fun team and we're scattered all over the world. So, I mean, now our CEO lives in New York, so he used to live in Venice. So if that tells you anything.
There we go. Hey, Rob, thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Hey, thank you, Paul. I appreciate all the time here today. Thanks.